This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Randall, if you ever wanted to become a singer, don't quit your day job.
I know that already. I've tried. It never went anywhere.
Let's go on here.
Okay.
You know, I really want to just emphasize my point, though, because we're talking about different kinds of people attracted to UFO research, paranormal research, etc. Do you think there's anything in the reality of such phenomena that attracts a certain class of people, or is it strictly because the general public doesn't really take it that seriously, except in maybe an entertainment fashion, that people who are a little bit offbeat begin to look at subjects like this?
I think that there was an interesting study done by my friend Jeff Ritzman, which was quite scholarly, and it's Project Core. They had a look at this, and there's reams of information in regards to this in parapsychology, not so much in ufology. I think the only real dominant thing in regards to witnesses is witnesses tend to, especially the ones who go on to have multiple experiences, tend to be very creative types of people. You know, they are singers, they are musicians, they're artists, they're writers, they're just people in general that tend to have a sort of playful sense about them. That was one of the things that I learned when I was talking to Dr. Joel Wheaton about the famous project that was done here in the 70s called the Philip Phenomena. And he was the one of the primary technical directors from a psychiatric standpoint on this experiment, which basically what they were doing is they were trying to create a ghost or a poltergeist out of a fictional story. And they were doing this based with people that they had pooled from sort of the general public. But the one thing that they really looked for in these people that they were going to bring together to do sort of like a mock seance with this sort of fictional story to see if they can create a real ghost was they chose from people that were playful, people that were creative. And I think that that's what Jeff had found as well, is that with the UFO witnesses, they tend to be creative people. But other than that, it seems to be across the board, people with different sort of educational backgrounds, different cultures all over the world. There doesn't seem to be many different things that we can say, okay, this is the ideal witness, or this is the type of person that is going to go on to become a UFO witness. At least that's my finding.
We seem to have a sort of a, maybe I'm just noticing this because, as Gene pointed out, I'm a really terrible singer, but I've also been a musician, and it seems like there's a fair number of musicians that take an interest in this. I mean, we've got the Tom DeLonge guy, we've got the Foo Fighters, we've got had John Lennon even back.
Yeah.
There's even a whole book on people who are musicians who have had these strange, bizarre UFO experiences, and that includes me. Do you play an instrument?
And, of course, we also have the late Reg Presley of the Troggs.
Yeah.
Wild Thing, who wrote a book about crop circles.
Yeah, well, I love music. I was married to a musician for many years, but I personally can't really carry a tune well. That doesn't stop me. I paint, though. I do a lot of crafty type things and within my own spirituality as well. So I do feel that I'm a creative person. And then I also like to write. So that's sort of my sort of UFO mojo is in there is that. But it does seem that creative people tend to sort of dominate within the witnesses, the multi-witnesses, or people that go on and they have a lot of experiences, different things.
I want to ask you now, let's go into this because we're a third of the way into the show. We haven't gotten much into it. The mountains out of mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what kind of mashed potatoes they used again in that film. I'm thinking here they use instant mashed potatoes. Okay,
yeah,
it did have the consistency of mashed potatoes. And I think if you want something realistic, you see, nowadays they use CGI. But in those days, you wanted mashed potatoes, you got mashed potatoes. Tell us about your odyssey about UFOs as a parapsychological event. Because that's not spaceships, folks.
No, that's not spaceships. Basically, I mean, it could be spaceships, but I don't think so. I think it could represent spaceships. I think that what we need in ufology right now, so the ETH is one thing, but it hasn't really brought us anywhere any closer to our knowledge or even better questions as far as what UFOs truly are. I have been exploring since my days as a skeptic alternative ways of looking at UFOs, and one of those is to look at it from a parapsychological point of view, and this is taking less into maybe account the actual nuts and bolts of the experience and looking at the witnesses themselves and sort of where they are in life and really paying attention to the very strange aspects that go along with UFO experience that sometimes can be discounted by the more nuts and bolts type UFO researchers who are more interested in what did the craft look like? What was the weather condition like? As if this is a truly materialistic only event. And they perhaps lose a lot of sort of the richness and the complexity of the experience by not really focusing on the witnesses and the more strange seeming details and like that were pretty much covered in the movie between the two characters, where you have the woman and her little son, and there's that iconic scene of the little boy, and he opens the door, and all his toys are like going crazy, and there's all these lights, and the house is shaking, and that, and you get this genuine feeling of a poltergeist experience that is going along with this sort of UFO thing that's compelling this little boy outside into the field. And I think that if we start looking at things from a parapsychological viewpoint, which has been done in the past but is very rare to see, that maybe we can start pooling out more and different bits of information that could lead us onto other sorts of avenues to explore the UFO experience, not just the nuts and bolts. So that's what I'm trying to, with my essay for the book, Reframing the Debate, is trying to point out that there are a lot of really strange aspects of the UFO experience that could do with sort of a parapsychological sort of lenses and models to examine that aren't taken into consideration in sort of like the mainstream UFO sort of research community, if that makes sort of sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. What's your sort of favorite aspect of that, or the thing that intrigues you most when you get looking into that way of viewing the phenomenon?
I'm always very interested in synchronicity. What made the person look at that point in the sky? Usually when you start really talking to witnesses, there's something else going on in their lives. And for whatever reason, they feel compelled. Something is pulling them to look. You know, most of us go about our daily business, and this could get back into the general public, why they're not seeing things, because they're not really looking up into the night sky. But when you talk to people, they tend to, something happens, either it's a little voice in their head or something happens that might put them in the right place in the right time to have this sort of really exceptional experience. And a lot of people do go on then to sort of go through this transformative phase where they have this experience and then they come out the other side with this completely different sort of worldview, or even sometimes like a new direction in life that they never had before. And so that sort of interests me, the synchronicity. Sometimes you have telepathy or other strange things. Like when I had my 1990 experience, and it was thinking in my mind, and I did say it out loud, and it wasn't until later that you know, I remembered it, and I mentioned it to my brother-in-law, and he said, yeah, I remember you saying that. That was so weird. You know, I know, or they know we can see them. Who are they and what are we, and how would they possibly know we were looking? I mean, it was a very odd statement. So things like that, telepathic things, you know, and then of course the poltergeist stuff. And some of this happens before and some of it happens after the main UFO experience. People will have, they will have this sighting of a spaceship, and then, you know, months later they'll start having poltergeist activity in their homes.
You know, that's something that's very interesting to me for a lot of reasons, mm-hmm. and we'll get into that in our next segment. Susan Demeter St. Clair, Gene Steinberg, Randall Murphy, you're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, we've made such a deal with HelloFresh, and it means that everyone listening to this show can receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code PARACAST30. You know, with HelloFresh, you can choose the delivery day that works best for you. They've got a wide variety of chef-curated recipes that change weekly. And can you imagine me cooking Japanese panko chicken? It makes me feel like I'm a chef. It means also that you could actually get your meal cooked in 30 minutes. For busy people, this is perfect. The simple recipes include step-by-step instructions so even I can figure it out. Go to HelloFresh.com, use the offer code PARACAST30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. HelloFresh.com.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Hi, I'm Marcia Miller from Mud Pie. Every new parent dreams of bringing their baby home for the first time. But some babies are born too sick or too soon to come home right away. That's why Mud Pie supports the life-saving research and programs of the March of Dimes, the leading nonprofit organization for pregnancy and baby health. Help us give every baby a fighting chance so that more babies can come home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.org.
If some high-pressure salesperson twisted your arm into buying a timeshare, it's not your fault. Whether you bought decades ago or days ago, I bet that salesperson didn't mention your timeshare could cost you twice as much as a regular vacation, or that you'd never be able to use it when you wanted, or that your fees could shoot up every year. They misled you, and that's not fair. That's why we're here, to get your timeshare company to free you from your unwanted timeshare. Get the free information you need at 1-800-783-2959. We're the Timeshare Exit Attorneys, America's number one timeshare exit service run by real attorneys, not sales companies or middlemen. It was a salesperson who got you into this mess. Don't rely on a salesperson to get you out. We've got a 100% service guarantee, and our team has already helped thousands of people get out of unwanted timeshares. For free information, call 1-800-783-2959. That's 1-800-783-2959, 1-800-783-2959.
Want revenge on the common housefly? Well, after 10,000 years, someone has finally come up with a better way. The Bug Assault, a miniaturized shotgun, which utilizes ordinary table salt as ammunition. Non-toxic and no batteries required. So much fun, you'll forget you have a wife and kids. $39.95 and free economy shipping. Use discount code GCN and get an extra 10% off your purchase at bugassault.com. Makes the perfect stocking stuffer. Get your Bug Assault today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
You see, this is one of the other faults I find with a place like MUFON that believes in ETH and doesn't look at other possibilities. And you might have seen this in seeing how they have their investigator's manual. And that is, they're focusing on the UFO as a separate event. You see an airplane and you report it. You see a UFO, you report it. It's an external thing. You're not influenced by it unless, you know, maybe you get too close and you have, like, Cash Landrum or someone where someone is possibly injured by some kind of poisoning or radiation.
Yes.
But you're pointing out something here, too. Someone sees a UFO. Maybe they have other experiences. Maybe there's poltergeist, something else. Maybe there's a background in the family of strange phenomena through the years. So even if you never saw a UFO before, maybe there's something else they could look at. But an organization like that so tightly focused on one aspect of the phenomenon never looks at these issues, never looks at the impact of people and how their lives can be turned upside down. And it's not just the guy in Close Encounters. Oh, by the way, I know you subscribe to the theory that the French scientist in Close Encounters was based on Jacques Vallée. I understand that's not the case, but I forget the name of the actual person.
Oh, okay. I always thought it was Jacques Vallée.
We all did, but I think Jacques told me this. He may have said it or someone else that he was not the guy.
It's possible. Maybe it was Amy Michelle?
No, somebody I never heard of.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I always thought it was him. I guess maybe it's someone else. Well,
maybe it was just some composite character made to...
Possibly.
I'd like to get back to this...
You sound more like a French-Canadian.
That's from all the French I had to take in high school. I'd kind of like to get back to this parasociology. We were just getting into that when the way you were describing how the witness, the human side, the experience, and how it changes our worldview, and how people interact and together and within a society. I mean, you know, when I said welcome to the family back at the beginning, that's kind of a way of summing it up. There's, in my mind, and I don't know, just if I could get your comment on this.
Okay.
I feel as though being a witness makes me part of a larger community who know that there's a larger worldview and that out there in society someplace, I can't pinpoint for sure exactly who's telling the truth and who's not, but I know I'm not alone. I know these people have to be out there.
Sure.
And so there's this sense of other people as part of the world that also knows. It's hard to explain. Do you sort of get what I'm saying there at all?
Oh, I do. And thinking in the larger terms of, like, UFOs tend to be sort of an individual experience, and they're transformative towards the individual. But they can also happen in large waves. And this also gets me thinking about Vallée again, because you had mentioned Vallée and his control system and all these sort of thoughts. But in regards to sort of change and societal change, we can look at UFO waves. And UFO waves they tend to be sustained over a long period of time, maybe a year, and you're going to have multiple witnesses of multiple various phenomena, all in a very concentrated sort of society. And one of the things in regards to parasociology that we can look at is the Belgian wave of 1990. In 89, I believe it began. And its concurrent wave, which was happening in the Soviet Union also in 1989 and 1990 at the same time. And if we consider those and consider the vast number of people that were reporting very good sightings, multiple sightings, and certainly on the Belgian side, you had the military and the police and the civilian ufologists all working together on this UFO problem. But you can look at it, if you start looking at what was going on sort of as a group, as a society, you had massive, massive changes going on in Europe. You had the fall of the Berlin Wall. You had the collapse of the Soviet Union. You had millions of people probably living in states of anxiety, not knowing what was going to happen to their futures. And then you have a bunch of UFOs appearing over the NATO headquarters, of all things. So if you start thinking along those lines, you can start seeing that there's something greater going on here. And as far as, like, if you think from a parapsychological viewpoint, that poltergeists happen to people who perhaps have sort of inner anxieties that they cannot express outwardly correctly. So they have all this sort of PK or this sort of physical phenomena. It's almost like a cry for help, you know, banging on the walls, this sort of very physical phenomena. Now all of a sudden you have millions of people living in sort of flux where this in Europe is in sort of disarray. You have the Soviet Union collapsing. You're living in this really, really pivotal human time, and all of a sudden you have this burst of UFO activity. To me, you'd be lost not thinking that, you know, hey, this happened over NATO headquarters. Was this some sort of a, hey, look at me, like, what's going on here in relation to society at the time as it's expressing itself over a military base, over NATO headquarters, into a greater society? So it's almost as if it's sort of enacting some sort of a transformation, or it's going along with this transformation in this very spectacular way.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When we look at it from that perspective, we could maybe say that earlier waves were associated with a lot of the Cold War stuff that was going on. We had the 52 DC flap there.
Yeah, you also had the McCarthy stuff going on as well, and then you have these UFOs just appearing over Washington D.C. Again, very well documented. Like these are genuine cases. This is a genuine UFO wave.
Yeah, some of those were really, really good too. At first, I had dismissed the Washington flap, but the more I started looking into it, the more I found that there really was a lot more there than just lens reflections and in photographs.
Yes, and the same thing with Belgium. I mean, a lot of people, they focus in from a skeptical, I call them pseudo-skeptics, the arch-deniers here will focus in on the one sort of hoaxed photo of a triangle and say, aha, see, this is a hoaxed photo and this were all triangles, or they will say this was all some sort of secretive sort of Americans testing out stealth fighter, which I don't believe at all. If you look at the COBEPs and the SOBEPs, the ufologists, and they were doing a great job. They were doing an amazing job at the time, and what the police were recording, what the military were recording, you didn't have just triangles. You had discs. You had daylight discs. You had bell-shaped UFOs. You had these diamond-shaped things. You had all sorts of different humanoids that were being reported on the ground. So you had like just all this various sort of this amazing stuff happening, but yet all that people tend to want to focus on is that one hoaxed image of the triangle. This seems to be with waves too, with the UFO waves, is you'll have a mixed bag of, you have really genuine, amazing stuff, and then in comes the hoax or the more questionable stuff. And so you got to really sort of wheat for the chaff.
Do you think we got some disinformation going on there by the powers that be to try to counter it in any way? How far down that rabbit hole should we go?
Before we go down rabbit holes, let's go here. And then we'll continue with Susan, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
Actual testimonials from real Numana customers.
I've tried all kinds of food storage, and Numana is by far the best.
I'm a single mom with two teenage boys and a full-time job. I don't always have time to cook a four-course meal. That's where Numana has been such a blessing. I can spend less time in the kitchen and more time on what matters most, like helping with homework.
Find out for yourself. Order online at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Numana is
the store I love to eat.
Thepowermall.com.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Calvin's Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FiveStarSoap.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-557-0158. That's 800-557-0158. Again, 800-557-0158.
People search the internet for everything, including you. With a few clicks, information from your past can be quickly discovered, from business deals gone wrong to misleading reviews, negative articles, and unflattering images. Studies show 78% of people search for someone online before doing business with them. Will they find the real you? With ReputationDefender.com, you can establish a positive internet presence. ReputationDefender.com pioneered the field with over a decade of experience serving thousands of successful individuals and businesses. We use patented, award-winning systems to boost positive content and suppress negative material. Don't let the internet define you. Take control of your reputation today with ReputationDefender.com. For your quick, free reputation analysis, call 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
And just to add to that long question, Randall, for Sue, how much evidence do we lose because we are so centric, so focused directly on the objects and the possible spaceships that all the other stuff is just set aside as irrelevant?
No, I think you make an excellent point there, Gene. Like, I know that, you know, when we get into it, I tend to go, okay, well, we're looking at UFOs as some sort of craft, but that doesn't mean that the craft aren't here for a reason. And I think that the reason has to do with all the things we're talking about here. I mean, if they have effects on people and those effects seem to be directed in a particular way, when you get radar visual sightings and you get these craft interacting with military craft back in the early days, specifically when we know that they weren't just fake reports and couldn't be verified, but they were happening, there's an obvious intention there. So we can say, okay, so there's a craft, but what are they doing? And the only way we can really examine that is by really looking at the witnesses.
That's the only tangible thing we actually have are the witnesses themselves. And I think more needs to be focused on that. And we have to let people just tell their story. I have interviewed so many people over the years and they always start with, I know this sounds crazy, but, or they will, you know, they'll tell their story and then they'll add something in and they'll say, you know, I really didn't know how I felt about telling you this, but, you know, I'm going to tell you anyway. And I just feel they know it sounds absurd. And maybe that's part of that control mechanism that Vallée talks about is this absurdity that sort of then people feel that they're going to be ridiculed. They feel that the whole experience will then become discounted. So you have these really strange aspects. And that's why I kind of tell people, tell me everything. Tell me everything. I'm not going to judge you. I want all your stuff. Whatever happened, no matter how crazy it sounds or you think it sounds, I want to know it all. And it's that devil in the details, I think, that may help us formulate new sort of questions as to what is really going on here. Because that is the only tangible thing we have, is the people that go and experience these things, they have these experiences.
Absolutely. I think the witnesses are the evidence themselves. Okay, let's turn this around, though, and just say, okay, maybe we're looking at this from a completely sort of homeocentric point of view, where these craft are really not that interested in us. We're no more, say, interesting to them than the trees and the plants and the whales and the other things here. And we just happen to want to make ourselves so special that we think they must be studying us for some reason, but really, What if they just don't really care that much? Are we making more out of them than they are out of us?
But they seem to be interacting with people in very, very transformative ways. Certainly the people are going through some sort of transformation process after they had these very strange experiences. And then we can get into the abductees too. Some of them find that they have been spiritually transformed and they feel it's a very good experience for them. Others feel quite frightened and terrorized and suffer actual PTSD symptoms because of their experiences. So it's very difficult to say what may or may not be a motivation of whatever this thing is. It has different effects on people. Again, that's why I think it's important to focus on them, because it certainly is, whether or not it is meant to do so, this is the side effect, or what happens to witnesses is they tend to have their repercussions to the experience itself, transformative anyway. And that's why we have to explore that. We don't know what the motivation could be. We don't even know really what, if they're truly spacecraft at this point. I'm not willing to say that they are, because I don't know. They certainly want us to think so, or if it's in even them. I don't know. It's just something that looks like a spacecraft. But then, you know, in the medieval times, maybe it was a dragon or a chariot or something.
Well, then are they causing us to see them as spaceships, or do we see them as spaceships because that's our cultural frame of reference?
I don't know, because I think people started seeing spaceships prior to really the space age, sort of, the space race. I think there's some evidence to suggest that it's almost precognitive, so people have these experiences just pre to the technology, so maybe their point is to inspire the technology that's coming down the pike. I don't know. I just think that that there could potentially be a co-creative process, in that there is something physical going on, as was mentioned. You know, occasionally there are radar hits. Occasionally there are some sort of physical traces, but they tend to really lead nowhere. They tend to almost be absurd or nonsensical. But where I don't want to lose my train of thought here either. But I think that what happens is that it's the transformative effect is definitely there. And that is something that has to sort of be sort of honed in on, I think. And that you can only do that with the witness. I don't really know, but I think that is probably going to gather us more information than has been in the past with just the simple nuts and bolts, without trying to understand the more greater complexities of the UFO experience as a whole. And for people, individuals, and for larger communities, if that makes sense.
We have a weekly newsletter called the Paracast Newsletter. And those of you who are interested, it's free. You can subscribe by clicking on the links at our site, theparacast.com, or at forum.theparacast.com. And in one of the issues going back a few years, one of our favorite contributors, Skyle, calls himself Red Pill Junkie.
Oh, Miguel.
Yes. He wrote a piece, and I asked him to do this after he appeared on the Paracast. I said, give me maybe 1,000 words or 1,500 words as a guest editorial on the theory of the relationship between a near-death experience and a UFO abduction. And it became like 5,000 words. And very elaborate to explain the connections, the similarities. Now, we have to split for a break in about 2 minutes, so I'm rushing you along, Susan, but we can pick it up in our next segment. Have you had a chance ever to look at any of that? Okay, I was asking you the question.
All right, so you've asked me the question. I have recently talked to a person who is a UFO experiencer abductee who has described the experience almost as if their soul is being torn from their body. That is their words, not mine. But it certainly sounds very much like a near-death experience because they're equating their soul as what is leaving the body to be on board a ship. So and that is how they experienced it, how they felt it, like a forceful sort of my soul is being ripped from my body. So, yeah, there is a connection between near-death experience, I think, and the abduction experience. I think it's almost like a very much an inward sort of journey. It's more of a shamanic thing than a physical thing, but it has physical manifestations and physical repercussions to the people who are having this experience. If that makes sense to you, this is where I'm sort of at with that sort of experience right now. And that, of course, both are transformative. People that go through an abduction experience, just like people that go through near-death experience, they're transformed. At the other end of the experience, there's a transformation that has taken place. They're forever changed, and sometimes very radically so.
Well, one of the things I see when we look at this is the mystical way that the experience proceeds, like they're taken out of their bed and maybe they float through the walls of their home and end up on the spaceship. And then some people with near-death experiences, they remember themselves floating above the hospital bed or wherever their body is and seeing what's going on.
Yes.
And that is a connection right there. But then the problem in UFO research is we're just looking at aliens. And the aliens are landing, and they're just abducting people and performing painful experiments on them with instrumentation that doesn't seem to coordinate or conform with a highly advanced civilization that ought to be able to do this painlessly without having to even physically touch the person or bring them aboard a spaceship. We've got more to come with Susan Demeter St. Clair, J. Randall Murphy, Gene Steinberg.
You're in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready to eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and served. Life-saving, ready to eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
The answer to being in control of your own health care is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from 3 health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting, providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com, virtual care anywhere.
Have you ever wondered who the second person to discover gravity was? When you're in the mood for a treat, would you go to the second best bakery in town? Or how about the name John Breckinridge? Recognize it? If you don't, that's because he came in second to Abraham Lincoln. The firsts are first for a reason. Just how ID Stronghold was the first to create the technology to protect your credit cards from thieves with RFID chip scanners. ID Stronghold products block signals from those scanners, so thieves can't capture your critical data. Get a stronghold on your personal information and protect your family too. Don't settle for the second best wallet. Pick up ID Stronghold wallets for everyone on your list this holiday season. They're the perfect stocking stuffer, with leather wallets starting as low as $20 on Walmart.com, eBay, Amazon, and QVC. Save 10% by using coupon code PRESENT for a limited time. That's coupon code PRESENT, only on IDStronghold.com. IDStronghold.com.
This just in, before your doctor gives you another antibiotic prescription that you don't want, get this free report, The Miracle of Garlic, Your First Home Medicine. This free report is filled with easy kitchen remedies for common colds, flus, sore throats, ear infections, and more. Plus, learn to boost your immunity before you get sick. Go now to GCNwellness.com, just like it sounds, GCNwellness.com, to get your free report, The Miracle of Garlic. Click GCNwellness.com.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we've been focusing a little bit on abductions, and when we try to do that on the Paracast, sometimes it gets a little wacky. But I was just bringing up Miguel's discussion, which is not unique to him, as he says. What do you think further about these other aspects of abductions that we're not paying attention to, unfortunately?
I think that there are parallels between the two, that if you're looking at both, if you're examining both, they're undeniable. It's the same thing with the aliens. The aliens often display abilities that are very paranormal, in the sense that they're like ghosts. They're walking through walls. They're just appearing in homes. They're doing all sorts of very sort of ghostly-like things as well. If you examine all these various sort of paranormal things that are occurring, at their base, they seem to have a very similar sort of mechanism. The thought as well that was done by Dr. Scott Rogo in the 70s, who's one of the few parapsychologists who actually looked into UFOs. He did a discussion on a haunted sky, thinking literally that these things that were appearing were like ghosts. They were more apparitions. I've explored that as well, and through sort of dream symbology, are the UFOs more trying to communicate to us through a sort of dream language, so that the UFO itself might look like a spaceship, but if we start maybe looking at the shape and the color and the context of how they appeared and what was going on in the lives of the people that were witnessing these things, maybe there's a symbolism in there that is being lost because we're only focusing on the very basic idea of a spaceship. You had mentioned to me before about whether or not I felt that we have a sort of creative aspect as well, if it's part of our expectation of what we think that we're going to see. So culturally, we're conditioned to see a spaceship. That's possible. Or what could be happening is we could be co-creating with something else. Maybe it is an alien. Maybe it's an alien other that is showing to us something that we, in our very naive state of development as a species, can understand. I used to think that, you know, centuries past, people were seeing spaceships, but they were just misinterpreting them, and they were calling them chariots in the sky, and then there was dragons or whatever flying around. And now I've actually really flip-flopped on myself, and I've changed my mind, thinking more or less, no, they probably actually really were seeing dragons in the sky. They are telling you exactly what they saw. Perhaps it is part of a more co-creative process with the individual, with perhaps an alien other, perhaps with a universal consciousness. that's sort of replaying sort of our fairy tales and myths out to us, I don't really know. But I think that asking these deeper questions and looking more at the whole sort of from parapsychology and ghosts and the spaceships and all these different things, and even cryptozoology, when it is the more strange or high strangeness with that, if you start looking and stripping away all the language that we have added and these stories that we have built on the base experience, you can see that there are commonalities with them all. So maybe that's what MUFON needs to do if it wants to be more relevant to our times, you know, sexism and all that aside. Maybe it needs to start looking at more like parapsychology. And I know this is going to be a great big fight for some people, but maybe that is what it needs if it wants to potentially ask better questions, is to sort of look more at the total experience. Because people that do have UFO experiences, many of them do also experience ghosts, or if you start talking to them, you find out they grew up in a haunted house, or they have maybe some psychic abilities, or things of that nature that I think are currently sort of being, by the mainstream UFO community, sort of swept under the rug, so to speak.
I think that works both ways to some degree. I've tried to network with some of the paranormal research ghost hunter types here in Alberta and online, and I find that there's a real sort of resistance to the idea that the phenomena could be a unified thing. It's like, it's the DPH hypothesis.
Yes.
And that's all there is to it. And they're just as stuck in that and as the ETH. And I think that's another good point you make on your website.
But it goes both ways, because, I mean, if the idea that a UFO or some anomaly in the sky is an alien spaceship has become entrenched, and it has over 70 years, it is really entrenched in people's minds, then you can say that the ghost, as a dead person, that goes back a millennia or more. That's like going way back. That is truly entrenched in people's minds. They absolutely believe that a ghost is the spirit of a dead person. So they don't want to hear that maybe the same thing that's creating alien experiences could be this, because it doesn't work for them and in their belief system. And that's fine. You know what? People can believe whatever they want to believe, but as long as we're all like respectful for each other and we all have some sort of voice and something we can contribute. And if we do that, then maybe we can come up with some better stuff moving forward. But I hear you. It used to be in the Parapsychological Association as well on their website. It absolutely said, oh, we do not look into UFOs. I think the webmaster has taken that down now since Eric and I had Eric's book got published, Illuminations, which Dr. Eric Ouellette, his book, that really looks at the parapsychological and the parasociological lenses of larger UFO ways and to a little bit individual UFO experience. I think since then they've taken it down because he is the Canadian liaison for the Parapsychological Association. But prior to that, yeah, we don't look into UFOs. I guess they thought, you know, UFO people are crackpots or whatever. So that's a snobbery and an elitism there that also, that's the other side. So it works both ways.
So we're putting everything into boxes.
Yes, and we can't do that because the only thing we have at this point is this is an experience that human beings have. That's all we know, really, for sure.
I think we can apply some critical thinking to it and arrive at some most likely hypotheses that are better than others. But I was just reviewing some of my notes as we were going here, and maybe I've missed this. If you could clarify, you said you had a sighting in 1990 and then in 2001. Did we get to the 2016 sighting?
2016, I had an experience as well, where in this point I was actually going to do a bit of a sky watch and I was going to follow some sort of specific protocols to doing that. It was a sort of just project for myself, and I had set this up and I'd been thinking about it and contemplating it for a couple of months, and I went out to the location I was going to go at, and this is up in Lake Huron area, a nice remote area that I had been staying at. So the first night up there, no cameras, no nothing. I went out to the lake and I was out there with two other people. And that's, of course, with no cameras, when I saw this light, and from this light seemed to morph out a flying saucer. At that point, I just sort of, I was chuckling to myself thinking, of course, there's no camera equipment here. And I just thought, this is almost as if some cosmic trickster was sort of like, just, yeah, well, there you go. This is what you get for trying to plan out a sky watch. We're going to show up when you're least expecting it. So there. That was that experience. And that was a bit eye-opening for me.
That's the trickster at work.
if you look at the whole UFO experience and other experiences too, paranormal, there seems to be the trickster archetype or motif that can be applied to much of this. Even like with the best of intentions, people will go out and they do things like say going to a haunted house and having a vigil, and it's usually the best sort of things happen when the equipment is switched off or the battery's drained or they've given up on the vigil and they're sort of discussing about, okay, so, you know, we're tired, it's 4 a.m., let's go get a coffee. And this is where you'll get this spooky voice that bisects the recording. So it's not like something that happens that you can sort of electively seems to happen exactly as you want it to. This is where you get more into the sort of magic sort of aspects of the phenomena. It almost has that sort of trickstery motif that goes along with the experience. You can have these most spectacular things and the cameras are not working or they're not around or it's all spontaneous somehow, regardless of the best of planning. So
this phenomena that you're talking about, to me, looking at it, and I know exactly what you're saying. Christopher O'Brien, our usual co-host here, has also got an excellent book on the trickster. Mm-hmm. A couple of them, some of the best I've seen on it. And what I seem to notice is the common denominator with all of this is that there is an air of uncertainty about it. It doesn't ever want to leave enough evidence for people to be able to say that this is proof for someone else. It's proof for them, but not for someone else who's looking for some sort of confirmation. And so we've got all of these people in society separated by an inability to essentially read each other's minds and try to have some sort of connection. It's really quite interesting. Like, we know everyone is out there who's had these experiences, but we don't know for sure which one. We have no evidence. We just know it has to be there.
Well, that's the thing. Maybe there's that message. Maybe there's the lesson in that. I don't really know, but you're correct.
I think that's a really important part of this whole phenomena. For people who know this truth, for us to find a way to make that connection. I think that's the challenge. If I was to look at it and say if there was any sort of intent behind it at all, that seems to be part of it.
Sue, Gene, Randall, you're in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Hello, Mr. Anderson. The NSA has noticed how much time you spend on conservative news sites. We have no choice but to consider you a domestic terrorist.
Tired of your internet activity being monitored by Big Brother? Get VirtualShield.com, the world's easiest-to-use virtual private network. Browse the web anonymously, leaving pesky advertisers and spies in the dust. Get started today at VirtualShield.com. Take advantage of our free 30-day trial. VirtualShield.com. You have the right to remain private.
A commemorative President Trump dollar for only $5? Yes, the historic Trump dollar starts at only $5 at TrumpDollar.us. Choose from our unique three-coin collection in gold, silver, and copper. The Vote Trump dollar, Inaugural Trump dollar, and Make America Great Again Trump dollar. Available only at TrumpDollar.us. Minted in the USA, our Trump dollars commemorate President Trump's patriotic stand. Order your Trump dollar collection today in time for Christmas delivery at TrumpDollar.us. That's TrumpDollar.us.